got in your brain, you're in the nerd's domain. Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Nerd's Domain Podcast. I'm here with Rob.
Having a good time.
And Shirley.
Hello.
I'm, of course, Matt. And this week, we're once again doing our B-sides and classics. This week, we are discussing Fido and Alien. It's very exciting. Are you excited, Rob?
I love them both.
I'm with you on that one. So we'll start off with Fido. Fido is about a 1950s-ish town.
About Jack Russell that looks like Wishbone.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was
it
not
sounds
about.
Like it.
It nope, did. It, you were like Fido, and I was like, God, is this going to be a dog movie? Please tell me it's not.
Do you honestly think, I would recommend any kind of dog movie that wasn't an undead spectral dog?
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Is there an undead spectral dog movie?
Yes, there's the Frankenweenie.
Frankenweenie's a good movie.
I haven't seen it yet because Matt wouldn't take me on Halloween. Anyway, go ahead. Talk about Fido.
Sorry, I'm going to have to pull myself out of the bitter. So Fido is a movie set in the 1950-ish era.
I don't think it's supposed to be 50s.
According to this, in an earthly world resembling the 1950s.
It's resembling.
It literally says that.
Right. It's supposed to be like, it's supposed to look like the 50s, but I don't think it was the 50s.
Yeah, that's very possible.
I think this is like post-apocalyptic,
We should have paid attention to the newspapers.
Oh, they might have dates on them. That's a good point. So anyway, set in a 1950s-ish world, Fido is about a world that the zombie apocalypse happened because of space dust. That's said in the movie.
Radiation.
No, space dust.
It's space dust.
Space dust.
They explain it as radiation at the beginning. Oh, I should really, I'm sorry. I apologize to our listeners at home. We're going to go over some spoilers here. So just so you're aware, spoilers are going to happen. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, now's the time to stop listening. I apologize again. So 1950 world with space dust turned dead people into zombies. This kid, by the way, Timmy, brings up a very good question early on that we'll get to, but... Yeah. What about those zombies that are deep underground that are buried too deep and didn't get out?
That's the second movie.
That's Fido.
Oh, God. Did you not get it? That's going to be the second movie.
Oh, okay. I'm like, no, this is Fido. We're talking about Alien second.
It's been almost a decade and we haven't seen a second one yet.
That doesn't mean it won't happen.
Darn it.
Independence Day.
We'll see a Fido remake before we see a second Fido.
It's possible. So the story follows this family with a William H. Macy lookalike and Catherine Ann Moss as the mother and father, and poor little Timmy as an unknown actor, Keyson Lauder. Don't know who that is. Just he's the kid in this.
More importantly... This has Billy Connolly in it.
Yeah, Billy Connolly plays Fido, the main zombie that we get to meet. I like Fido.
The whole movie, because I've seen his stand-up act, the whole movie, because I've seen his stand-up act, like, every scene, I'm like, this is what he's thinking in his head, and this is what he's thinking in his head. And he's like, this tie is stupid.
So it follows the story of this family getting their a zombie. The dad hates zombies. He's terrified of them. And shenanigans ensue. Just want to say shenanigans, really.
It's a good one.
I really like this movie. It's bright in all of the 1950s ways.
So my fiance is like, what in the world is Fido? And I said, think Leave It to Beaver with zombies. Like that to me, yeah, oh yeah. Because, I mean, they're training the kids how to kill the zombies, but it's always like this really bright, kind of like heavy 50s propaganda style.
All right, kids, now it's time for outside education.
Right. Like... To me, the whole time, it's that very, like, when the zombie has an accident happen, it's very Beaver, like, protecting his dog.
My Seven Sons, Leave It to Beaver.
My Seven Sons?
Isn't it My Seven Sons?
It's my Three Sons.
My Three Sons, whatever.
My Seven Sons is the one about the devil.
Oh.
No, I don't know that that's the case.
I got those two mixed up.
So, anyway. Billy Connolly plays Fido. No real lines. Bunch of groaning. A lot of facial. But he's really good.
Yeah.
So good in this.
Really makes that character. And like, I mean, you really find through his actions that you connect in a weird way with him. And you're like,
yeah, you're rooting for him.
That's crazy. He's the bad guy. He's a zombie.
He's not a bad guy.
Well, because of the collar. Well, eventually, but they don't know that.
Right.
Up until that point, and even then,
I knew
then, like...
it from the beginning. Foreshadowing. Anyway, I was psychic.
Okay. What's his name? Henry Zerny. It plays Mr. Bottoms.
Yeah.
I love him.
He's recognizable from things. I honestly couldn't place him in anything. Well, okay, I guess Holes.
And then there's that other movie that I can't remember.
He was in the A-Team.
That's helpful to everyone.
He was in he was in Mission Impossible, the original one.
Oh.
Not the original one. The Tom
the
Cruise original
Tom
one.
The first Tom Cruise one?
The remake.
Yes. We'll call it
that one.
Yes, you do. The first Mission Impossible?
I don't remember him being in it.
Oh, that's very possible. But it also has, I'm trying to find Dylan Baker is the William H. Macy lookalike. It's like a young, thinner-faced William H. Macy.
He's a jerk like that in all the movies he plays in.
Yeah.
He's kind of that cowardly, spineless kind of character.
Yeah. Oh, he was in Trick or Treat.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, he's in The Americans for the current season.
I've never seen Trick or Treat.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're not missing much. Anyway, the movie itself is well shot, well done. It is handled for being a very like tongue-in-cheek movie. It is handled very well. They work really hard at giving you a good story. I'm sure there are some flubs, but they weren't bad. It had a a budget of $8 million, which, you know, that's not great, but it's not bad,
right? You could tell that everything was a set.
Yeah.
Except
for
when they did The Hills Are Alive with The Sound of Music. I felt like they should have broke out in a song when they were running through that meadow.
It had an $8 million budget, right? And it made less than $300,000 in the theaters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is way better than that.
It just wasn't
marketed, because I don't remember this movie coming out.
Well, you said it wasn't marketed, and then, like you had said, you saw the trailer, and it didn't fit the theme of the... No, yeah. It doesn't, because it seems like when you say something like Fido to someone, the first thing they think is that dog thing, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then you're like, no. This is a movie about a pet zombie. And then you have to explain that, yes, it's a movie about a pet zombie. And yes, it's damn good. Go watch the damn film.
Right.
It's really good.
Well, and there's a point where, so there are some bullies in the movie, as you're going to see, as there are. And they're part of the ZomCom Rangers.
Yeah, yeah.
The ZomCom.
ZomCom being the company.
Your new Boy Scouts.
Yeah, the company that stopped the zombie apocalypse, essentially.
By repurposing them.
Right. Well, no, first by realizing you shoot them in the head.
Right, right. But then they repurpose them.
And... Yeah. So the boys are the bully. These bullies catch Timmy and his zombie, tie them to trees, break the zombie collar, and then let the zombie attack Timmy, who the zombie then quickly kills both the boys. Kills one of the boys. The other one gets shot by his own brother.
Right.
So the mom comes out and helps clean this all up, and they're burning down the shed with the zombie boy bodies in it. And she goes, "Now, Timmy, I want you to understand, this is neither normal..." No, what did you say? Normal or
basically normal or appropriately? Appropriate. Yeah. Please don't think that this is.
This is not what we do. I was
I
just
know,
like,
Mom.
What? Yeah, and
I told you it's very Leave It to Beaver.
It is.
Like, I get that vibe the whole time I'm watching it. Not just because of the settings, because of the way it's presented and the way it's done.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I guess the dialogue between the son and the mom is a lot like
Leave It to Beaver. You get that, geez, Mom.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, and Timmy sticks out a little bit there because he's not the aw geez kid. Like, he's like the lady across the street's like, "I told you to put your bike away. You don't leave it out." And he's like, "Do you want it? Somebody steal it?" He's like, "Yeah, Mrs. not Robinson,
Henderson.
Whatever.
Henderson, yeah."
Like he mouths off a little bit, and he's not happy just to be happy. He
right.
asks
he's
the
respectful.
Hard questions
yeah.
about, like, he actually thinks it doesn't fit in that happy-go-lucky world, which I think is the reason we get this, because he has compassion for the zombie, unlike a lot of the other people.
Right. He's not just slave labor. He's like a thing.
Yeah, like, well, and I mean, he does treat him as a pet, almost like, towards the end, like a best friend, but he's definitely not just a mindless slave.
Well, I think that transition with Timmy is really what causes Mom to have the same kind of transition,
right? Well.
the necrophilic transition, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that Billy Connolly's, you know, give her in the eyes.
I'm going to eat your face off. All right.
Billy Connolly is so good in this. I really can't express enough how good Billy Connolly is in this. But it's a really good story. It's 90 minutes. It's not even, it's barely an hour and a half, but it feels good. It's a fast paced story. I didn't see a lot of hiccups. I didn't see a lot of problems with it.
You know, if I had a 12 or 13 year old that I wanted to introduce to zombie films the right way, I think this is the kind of film I would do it with, because it's not overly gory, but it's got that kind of like...
It's not heavy cussy either, right. So you don't have to worry about that.
And there's
that.
No like overly sexual innuendos or anything
Yeah,
like
no,
that.
I mean, there's a play between Mr. What's-His-Face.
Bottoms and smacks Tammy on the butt.
Not Mr. Bottoms. Mr. Bottoms is the bad guy. The Zomcom security guy. What's the other guy? I have the stupid
what's
thing.
What's his name?
Like, why are we not getting this? Mr. Theopolis. Theopolis has Tammy, and there's some interplay there, but even then, that's like 1950s naughty, which is not really naughty.
Right. So for me, like, this would be a kind of like a really good, like, this is a zombie movie, kind of. Like, this gives you the idea of what you're going to find in a zombie film, and it hits with like a lot of really big morals.
Yeah,
the way a good zombie film, a Romero zombie film, always has that kind of like, aside from like his first zombie, Night of the Living Dead. After that, he always made a really big moral statement in the film.
Night of the Living Dead has some moral statements in it. Has some very heavy moral statements in it.
It does, but it's not near as in your face.
Yeah, this is true.
As later Romero films it's true. Are, it's true. Right? And it's not near like the classic Night of the Living Dead isn't near as gory either.
No. So Yeah,
right.
It was last year or early this year that we finally saw Night of the Living Dead for the first time. It was last year.
Such a good film.
There's a place down on the South Side called
Franklin
Art
last
House
year.
Theater. They did for Halloween. It was Halloween time.
It was crazy. That movie
I want to say we spent $10 or $15 for we spent $30 for the entire marathon. It was Friday and Saturday of just horror movies, sci-fi movies. It was like Planet of the Apes and the Invasion of the Body Snatchers and the Night of the Living
Mothra
Dead was the one day.
Versus
it was, there was
Godzilla.
A Godzilla in there, and there was another one that was not Godzilla but still Godzilla.
What's his name? Gamera.
Yeah, and they ended it with Night of the Living Dead, which I'd never seen, and I was enjoying the movie until the end, and I was like, oh my god, what happened here?
Yeah.
Like, that blew my mind, and it was such an enjoyable film. And especially that one, I'm willing to accept, like, this was shot at a certain time and done with very low budget. So yes. I can accept some stuff that I wouldn't normally accept in other movies, but so well done. Yeah. So well done. I feel like this kind of movie, so, like, Fido reminds me of Shaun of the Dead.
Yes.
In the way that it handles things, that it's not like... We're also watching iZombie. Have you seen any of that?
I haven't seen that.
It feels a little bit like iZombie, too, because it's like zombie is a thing, and yeah, it's something we have to deal with, but it doesn't normalize it so much as it just allows it to be and allows humor to happen around it.
Right.
Because iZombie is essentially, as long as the zombies eat brains, they don't become zombies. They if they scratch somebody, they'll turn somebody.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
But It's a comic book to begin with, and then it's an interesting TV show that they put out. We've enjoyed the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But this movie really made me feel a lot along those lines, where it gave something, it took something and not necessarily parodied it, but made it lighthearted and enjoyable. And
right.
That's something that should be terrifying. I mean, like, Night of the Living Dead is terrifying. There are some scary parts there. A true zombie apocalypse movie is terrifying. This one did not treat it like that. It made it kind of enjoyable. Same thing.
Well,
with
it's not
the Dead
did. It's not your Walking Dead kind of.
Like, oh yeah.
You know, you're not dealing with that same kind of, because the point and the idea of the story is really about humanity refining humanity, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the kids are terrified of old people. I mean, they're absolutely terrified. Everyone's terrified of old people. They're teaching them the propaganda is, you know, make sure you take grandma down, get her right in the back of the head kind of thing, right?
Get the heart monitor so when they die, we'll know right away.
Right.
Like, that's terrifying.
Right. And so, like, and then they're like, okay, well, once you've got her down, guess what? We get to collar her up and put her within their family. Have fun.
Yeah.
Good luck. She's now a slave.
Whoa.
Sweet. But that's what they're doing in the film,
right?
So, and this is like, we're taking these people that we instead of taking care of them the way we normally would, now we're just kind of demonifying them,
right,
and pushing them off to the side.
Well, and there's a lot of hints there that not just Fido, but others have emotion and thought processes.
Right, like it's not a complete wash.
Tammy gets up. There's
Theophilus.
Theophilus says something to Tammy about just getting a newer model, and she gets upset. She's hurt by that statement.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the dog walker, because he doesn't have a name, he's hiding. He doesn't come out when everybody else is being shot. There's a logical process there.
Right.
Which makes me wonder what more there could be.
Right, right.
Which really makes ZomCom even worse, because they're not studying this. Or if they are, they just don't care.
Right.
So, yeah, it's such a good movie. It's short, sweet, and to the point, and makes it enjoyable. I liked it from beginning to end.
See, so I liked most all their characters have some kind of development. No one is kind of a blank slate. No one's just this bland little thing that exists. Except they all have...
The villain's still kind of the villain, though. I mean...
Well, the villain's the villain.
Mr. Bottoms is just kind of stays Mr. Bottoms.
But, I mean, they're out for money, right?
Right.
It's the corporation. And he kind of... He's the visual piece for that corporation, but he's the corporation, right? But... So I don't count him as necessarily like a character in the same manner, because he's the embodiment of... But the rest of everybody else, I mean, the father, the mother, the father has a whole backstory why he doesn't like zombies. It's not just arbitrary that I don't like them. You know, he had to put his dad down. That's a hell of a thing, right? That's a lot of stuff, right?
It's traumatizing.
Right. And then, you know, the wife wants to keep up with the neighbors next door. And so now, like, and it feels like natural in a family, like, this is how this interaction would take place.
Right.
Especially you get the little boy that's being bullied by the kids at school. So he's trying to find some way of connecting with something else.
Yep.
And then dogs aren't a common occurrence. Now zombies are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, even the Mr. Bottom's daughter, she has like this weird development where like she has to go to ballet and she clearly hates it. And then she shoots the zombie in the head, the dog walker zombie, and it's like saves people. And like it really, there's some steps to it that like show that everybody here is a person.
Right.
Except Mr. Bottoms, but again, he's the villain that happens.
Right, right.
And it's not, with Mr. Bottoms, it's not so, he still has a personality at least. He's not so flat.
Right.
Like, he's a war hero, so.
He's not a mwahahaha. I mean, he's still got that reasoning, that rationale for not wanting to study, for not wanting to be that person that steps up front and says, this is how we're going to do it. Because he was there when everything went down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, overall, I really enjoyed the movie. I don't want to, like, move on, but there's not a lot to talk about here, I don't feel like. There's not a lot to analyze, at least.
No, it really wears itself on the cuff.
Yeah, which is not a bad thing. It's something that I feel like I can put Fido on in the background anytime and be fine with that.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. So, I give this a solid 4 out of 5 on stars. Shirley, what'd you think?
Yeah, definitely. I'm right there with you, 4, too.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Then Rob, same thing from you.
Universal.
Yeah. So, decent movie. If you like your zombies but like a little lighter, then this is the way to go. I think, Rob, I think you're right, because there's no... Is this a PG-13 movie?
No, it's rated R.
I think it's R.
It's R horror.
There might be breasts or something weird that pop up like for a split second or something weird.
Let me you know what?
There's IMDb, also the gore.
There is a little bit of gore. I will say every murder they do is off screen.
Right.
Except for the one kid getting shot, but you don't see the bullet going. You just see him with a hole in him after his brother shoots him.
It's a tasteful.
You made me shoot my brother.
As odd as it is, it's a tastefully done zombie film.
Yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah.
So. It is rated R for zombie-related violence.
There you go.
Zombies make it... Yeah, because it says no sex or nudity, not especially graphic, zombie eats a woman's arm, not fully shown. Yeah. No. They really put it off. Very little profanity. Adults are drinking a little bit, but not a lot.
I would show my kid something like this before I'd let him play The Last of Us.
That's fair.
That?
Yeah, it's pretty tame. And I think this would be a good one to say, hey, this is kind of what zombies are like. You know, if you really want to see a zombie movie, kid, like, and not be, I don't have to worry about you being terrified in the middle of the night. This is the place to start. So,
right.
I like it quite a bit.
Fido, the introduction.
That's not us saying
zombies.
Go against the recommended rated R rating. That's saying as adults ourselves and as parents ourselves, we would make that choice that way.
Honestly, I would say that if the only reason it got R rating, which looking at what it says on IMDb, is because of zombie-related violence, I can kind of understand that because zombies are one of those taboo things. But given how much zombies have been flooding our pop culture right now, I don't think it's as big of a deal as it used to be. And I'm surprised this movie is not better well received.
Well, maybe
it was the time it was put out.
It was 06, right? So 07, this is before the big zombie revolution started to hit, because it didn't go mainstream until after Walking Dead, really. Like,
that's fair.
I mean, there were a lot of zombie films, but it wasn't like the motif to go to until after The Walking Dead.
I guess that doesn't make sense because
like 28 Days Later didn't do well. 28 Weeks mm-hmm. didn't do well, and those are good films, in a sense. you know, like your Day of the Dead, the Day of the Dead remake is phenomenal. That film is so well done.
Well, this is surprisingly, though, this is after Shaun of the Dead, which did really well.
Right. Shaun of the Dead really did really well, but that's because of who it had, not because of what it was. That's fair. Right. Yeah. That's really the big kicker there. But then Hot Fuzz didn't do well. That made me sad.
Which is really sad because Hot Fuzz is a fantastic
film. It is a good film. But, like, I mean, so, I mean, it's just, I think the timing of it was a little off. If it had been a few years later, it probably would have done really, really well.
It's fair. Something definitely to check out now.
$2.99 on Google.
It's also available on Showtime.
Yep.
Or if you're on Hulu, it is available there if you have your Showtime subscription.
Right.
So, next we're going to talk about Alien, the singular. This is a 1979 movie directed by Ridley Scott. This is really his big first big explosion onto the scene. This is rated.
Was it Ridley Scott Blade Runner?
Which came out after this.
Was that after this?
Yeah, I kept thinking it was before 83.
I thought it was before.
82 or 83. This is why he got Blade Runner.
Oh, okay. Okay. I couldn't remember. I got those two reversed. I thought Blade Runner was before.
This is listed as a sci-fi horror. I would say the sci-fi doesn't matter as much as the horror does because it is a very solid horror movie.
It is. Yeah. Okay, so let's just clarify for the people that haven't seen anything in the Aliens franchise. This is the last real horror of the franchise. The rest of them become really action-packed and less horror-oriented.
Each movie has its own theme and has its own style. So Aliens, plural, is an action thriller. Mm-hmm. Alien 3...
is more a drama.
Is more of a drama and like a prison drama.
Yeah.
Alien 4 is...
a Joss Whedon affair.
It's half of a Joss Whedon affair because it's heavily edited.
Yeah.
And some of the directing and other things were questionable at best.
Right.
So this is the first and last that's really a horror. Although I will say the second one is still pretty scary.
It's got
some jump moments.
It's really suspenseful, the second one is.
Very, very well
like,
done.
And there are parts that like... back and looking at it, you're like, oh, edge of the seat kind of stuff.
Well,
like,
the second one is an army.
Yeah.
Like it's a military action adventure movie.
And it's the second one. So if you haven't, again, if you're not familiar with the series, it's the second one that sets up the Colonial Marines. This is what sets up the aliens themselves. This kind of gives you like where they came from, what they are.
Well, and
to a degree.
Surprisingly, this is the first of seven movies that really deal with the aliens. So you have Aliens, Alien 3.
Alien Resurrection, Alien vs. Predator, Alien vs. Predator 2, Prometheus. Prometheus 2 is on its way, but it's not going to be called Prometheus. It's actually going to be part of the next Alien set.
Which is fair.
From what Ridley Scott is saying, he wants to tie everything back to the aliens, but he wants to kind of bypass all the other stuff that's happened and really make it his aliens again.
That's fine. I think Ridley Scott did a fantastic job with this movie.
Well, I think he had
I
a different...
was terrified.
Yeah,
honestly,
it's a scary movie.
I watched it as an adult. There's some good jump moments in it. It's not nearly as scary as it could be. If I were 13, 14 and watched this in my parents' basements with the lights off, I would have peed myself. Seriously, there are some points where I'm like, yeah, that's rubber suit. But at 13 or 14, I never would have seen that.
If you don't know the story of Alien.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
A crew lands on a strange planet after getting a distress signal.
Well, hold on. A commercial crew that has nothing to do with anything military.
And mining
that is,
crew.
Thank you. That's important because that doesn't come to the second film. But a commercial crew lands there and they are responding to the distress signal because they're going to get an extra bounty on it, so they're going to make more money. So they get to the planet. They find a bunch of these little weird eggs, and one of the crew members get attacked. When the crew member gets attacked, they bring him back onto the ship instead of quarantining him because they're stupid. And, I mean, that really is pretty dumb, right?
Yeah, we discussed if people would just follow freaking safety
protocol.
Procedures,
nothing of this would have happened.
Yeah.
Right. They try to take the thing off. It won't let him go. He's going to kill him. Then all of a sudden he wakes up and the thing fell off on its own. Like a few days later, it's hard to tell how time elapses in this.
25 hours, because that's how long they said it would take to fix the ship. It's probably less than a day, though.
Right. So less than a day. All of a sudden, they're sitting down to eat. They're getting ready to go home, and something bursts out of his chest, and that's the alien. Then the alien goes through, devastates the crew.
Yeah.
I mean, just decimates the crew.
Yeah.
Really systematically.
Except the cat.
Except the cat.
Cat gets away.
The cat and one character, Ripley, who becomes the crux of the series from that point forward. Ripley finds a way to take the alien out. Bada bing, bada boom. Here we are.
Yeah. I will say, first, let's start with a facehugger, because all these things have a name.
So,
all of them.
Oh, wait. Let's, before we even get to that,
yeah.
I think you were talking about the budget, right? $11
million. $11 million versus $79 million, yeah.
Versus the $10 million for like Space Odyssey, right?
Yeah.
And so I know that Geiger doesn't run cheap.
Yeah.
Right. That was everything.
Right.
Everything was designed by Geiger.
Yeah.
It was his world that Ridley Scott played with and played from.
And this was something we didn't mention last time is that this was a movie that builds upon itself later. So we get to Alien 2, Aliens, Alien 3, so on and so forth. That is not what Kubrick allowed. He did all of that with $10.5 million and destroyed everything.
Yeah.
If it didn't go into the movie, he destroyed it.
Yep.
If it went into the movie, like props and stuff, he destroyed that too.
Oh, yep. Wow.
He allowed no one to have anything. So the fact that got a sequel, because 2001 has a sequel, 2010. It actually has three sequels, but they're all books. 2010, they had to remake everything.
Yep.
Everything.
Yep.
This is not the case here, where Geiger put together a visual that we see replayed and revisited over and over again,
which
is great. I think that's key to this series.
That's key to the lore, right? But so, I mean, even then, like, if you look at Prometheus now, when they go to visit them on the planet, when they come back, because, again, if you haven't seen Prometheus, guess what? I'm going to spoil it. If you, when they get to the planet and they visit the creators, what they call them, or the makers, or whatever, they're sitting in the same style ship that had crashed on LV 426. Yes.
Yeah, because it's on LV 427 or something.
So what is that?
That's where the one in Prometheus sits.
That's what they're saying. They haven't clarified.
Yeah, I found Prometheus exceptionally slow and plodding, and I did not care for it.
I liked it a lot.
And maybe I need to revisit. That's fair.
See, I liked it a lot because it felt more like Alien.
That's fair.
Because it was Ridley Scott.
That's fair.
Right? It was Ridley Scott's vision of what the series should have been post-Ridley Scott.
Well, and this movie is very dark. Not in theme, although there is some darkness in the theme. But, like, they're in...
Filmed.
Unlike Star Trek or 2001, where we see brightness on everything, these people live in perpetual
darkness.
Like
twilight. Everything is conserved. Everything is
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, light is not cheap, so we don't run it. We don't like leave rooms open or leave things on for the sake of being on. We really take care of everything behind us.
Yeah. The lab and the
lab
dining
was bright
place and that was it.
Well, because everything around them, think about it, right? The commercial. Mm-hmm. We talked about that with the ship design too, right? They had it covered in grime and smudge. Yeah. It wasn't like super taken care of because it cost money.
Right.
And they weren't out. They were trying to make as much as they could off of a run. And that was the entire focus.
Yeah. And I like that. Mm-hmm. It allowed Ridley Scott. It allows for the end of the movie,
right?
Which we'll get to as we go. But like the visual is cluttered and dark and dirty, grimy. And
it looks lived in.
It does. Well, it looks lived in and unkempt,
right?
And that's also important because they wake from cryosleep in this,
right?
That's the start of the movie, is they wake from cryosleep. They go down to the planet. They fight over this. They have actual conversations.
Right.
They have two jerks on the thing that want a full share instead of a half share.
Right.
I don't always, you know, I was like, yeah, whatever. These are the same jerks we have everywhere else. Like, they want more money, but that made it feel immediately like this is just what they do. This is the situation we have. So I liked that and how that broke down. It just felt like a full movie too. It didn't feel like we didn't get backstory for anybody.
No,
but everybody had a personality and a reason.
Everybody
get more later. But
everybody had a backstory. You didn't have to hear it to make it.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
You could kind of fill that in and get that vibe from them without having that there. Right.
We have a ton of really good actors here.
Yes.
Tom Skerritt.
Yep.
He plays the captain. John Hurt is in it.
John Hurt is such a good actor, so underrated.
Sigourney Weaver is Ripley. She's the main character
that we
follow.
She's so overrated.
Honestly, I think that in this, she's really good.
No, in this, she's really good. I think later down the line, she lost the flair that she had for the series.
We have
I don't know. Galaxy Quest was amazing.
No, for this quest. Oh no, she's great. I think she's great.
She's great. She does good in other stuff. I think she's lost the flair that she had for this series. Like,
we also get Bilbo Baggins is in this.
Yep.
As spoiler, the villain.
Yep.
Of the piece, like,
the later or the first Bilbo Baggins, not the second.
That's true. That's very true. Literally, there are 8 people in this movie. That's it. That's in the voice of Mother. That is it. Which is amazing that we get a full story, and I feel like we were isolated, but I still feel like
2 hours, 15 minute running time, something like
that. No, it's actually 116 minutes.
It's just under 2 hours.
Yeah, then. Just under 2
hours. Yeah, and it was a long one.
For
what it is,
yeah,
it's a long film.
Like, the alien is played by one guy. It's not even, like, multiple things. Like, there was one guy that played the alien and 7 members of the crew, and that is it.
Yep.
So that's what we see the whole time. There's no interplay with anybody else. So, like, Fido had 45 actors in it.
Right.
It's a pretty big cast. A lot of those had no lines, but this has 8 people, which helps you bring your cost down, which is why Geiger getting so much money
didn't
really matter. But Sigourney Weaver was unknown at the time.
Right.
I don't think Tom Skerritt had a huge... None of these people had huge portfolios.
John Hurt had done a lot of stuff. John Hurt's always done a lot of stuff. He's been a very, very active actor, but he wasn't big in the States at that point. Like, people didn't recognize... And even now, a lot of people don't recognize that name. I mean, if you said, you know... Now he's your one of your special doctors or something like that. They'd be like, oh, that guy. Or, you know, if you'd ever seen the Jim Henson Storyteller, that's John Hurt. But
yeah, I need to see that.
It is so good. That series is awesome.
He's great in Spaceballs, where he reprises this role.
Oh, it's hilarious, too. That is so well done.
Shirley doesn't remember that scene.
Because he looks down at his chest and he goes, oh, no, not again.
So they're at this diner.
The thing is, I don't remember the part.
They're at this diner, and Barf and Lone Star come in, and they sit down, and they order the soup, the space soup of the space special.
Yeah.
And then John Hurt is sitting down with a couple other guys that are dressed like him.
Right.
And he stands up all of a sudden, and he coughs up the food, and he looks down at his chest, he goes, oh no, not again, and he flops back.
Right.
And the alien pops out of his chest, puts on a top hat, grabs a cane, and sings and dances his way out.
Before that, Barf goes, what was he having? He's having the special. Make mine the soup. And then, then the alien dances across, and they just go, check please, and they bail.
Oh my goodness.
Mel Brooks does a really good job of calling back to classic movies in a fun way.
Well, that wasn't that old either. I mean, you're talking like 85.
Spaceballs was 85. This was six years
prior to that. Yeah. And that Aliens was on the horizon. So,
So,
like, there's a big hub on it. So, I mean, he's really good about capturing that, like, what's popular at the time.
Yeah. So, you have a good cast here. I felt like everything felt hectic, like it should have. Like, they really did a good job of feeling confined. There was no room in those hallways.
No. They were working in really tight spaces, and they were working around each other really well.
Yeah, like they'd been on that ship for a while. The cockpit, like, there was no room to move around there.
Right.
There wasn't, like, room to stand next to each other. You climbed into your seat, and you were there. That was it. It's clearly not a ship you live in. It's a ship that you work in, and you're done. So, overall, I
like, they had the color, this is the one that has got the color guy and the little Weasley White dude that are friends, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They use this a lot in the 80s. You see these characters in Abyss that has a couple like that. You get this couple of guys that are like really polar opposites that are working side by side, and they get along so well.
Yeah. And at the, towards the end, the color guy really steps up and, tries. Fails because it's the alien that's gonna murder everybody, but he really tries to step up and really be something different. So when they go down to the planet and they find the eggs, because these things are nasty,
right?
It's like the effects on that, the way it lit up as the thing started to wake up inside.
Well, and you can see their lights on the fog real clean. Yeah. And I mean, you could just see the heads of the eggs, and they don't really know what they are, and they're poking and prodding and trying to figure it out.
And then it opens, and this thing uncoils itself and flies at this guy. And there's a short scream as it cuts away to a wide shot.
Yep.
And nothing.
Yes.
The facehugger is terrifying. Shirley said it's like a space spider. And that's really what it is.
I like it. So Geiger was talking about it, And he said, I like the idea of it being two hands. So when it grips, it wraps around and holds it in. But right. then he's like, you got to have some way of keeping it secured. So he done the tail that comes back around it. And if you look at a lot of the Geiger drawings, he doesn't use white a lot. Like that was a really special color for him to have with that face hugger, which
yeah.
really, really, really impressive.
Well, and it's got those sacks that, that breathe almost yes. so while it's attached.
Yeah. So it's breathing for the person yeah. as they do it. And then like, if you look at the mouth coming off, it's got that appearance of a female genitalia, but mm-hmm. that's important because that's where the egg sac is being deposited into the right. system, right? So it's got that really, it's got that like recognizable look, but then it's also like terrifying because it's this like 4 or 5 inch long thing that's just like launching out and drops yeah. down. Like right. the face hugger is a terrifying image.
Yeah. And when it does die, it falls off, it dies. They flip it over and look at it and it's all flesh and organs underneath. And it looks like, honestly, they just cut open, they took organs from an animal.
Right.
And put it in a mold there that was that. Still very effective. Very effective.
It becomes, I think, like later in the series, that becomes one of the most suspenseful parts of the whole thing. Oh, yeah. More than the aliens themselves, because it's right. so like, I mean, you are just, you can't see it coming in a lot of cases.
And it's once so it's small. There, you're done. Yeah. That's it.
There's no getting past that.
It's like, oh my God, there's an alien down the hall. I can run. It may not work, but I can at least run. Not with these face huggers. Once they're on you, you're done.
Right. I think I saw it fought off once in the series. There you go. And that was Ripley and Newt in the bathroom or the bedroom.
The lab.
In the lab, yeah.
It's fought off a little more in Alien versus Predator, but that's a action movie.
And I don't
so that's
count
a little
those.
Different. Well, I do because it has some of the, it builds on some of the concepts, which I'm still okay with, but it is a very different thematic feel to the movie.
Right.
So that's very important. Facehugger is terrifying. The eggs are creepy and weird. Yes. They have this like mucus everywhere.
Yeah. And when they open, it's got that goo on the inside and you're just like,
well, right. if you listen really carefully, you can hear it crackle and squelch open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gross.
So the alien spaceship that is in Alien on the surface of the planet, and then in Prometheus, it's basically the same type of alien ship, right?
Yeah, it's got the same pilot, the same navigator sitting down in the sea.
Right. So my question is, you have this alien race that sends out a warning from this planet telling nobody to, you know, come close. But then in Prometheus, you have the same type of aliens and the same type of ships that have the same thing going on.
Well, so it was a distress call they sent out, not a warning.
No, she deciphers it.
Well, eventually, right. Initially, though, it comes in as a distress call. Everyone's receiving it as a distress call, so it's pulling people.
It's a distress call, but she deciphers it, and then she says, oh, it wasn't a distress call.
Right,
it was
through
a
mother,
warning.
Right.
Right. So my question is, like, did Ridley's, what was Ridley's purpose for doing that? Did this race... two spaceships of this race, did they accidentally pick up this alien and then it started procreating on their ship?
So what we've seen now, at least up to this point, because we haven't seen it like expanded in Prometheus yet, right? We're waiting for the next films. But right now what we saw was that little black goo is what set off the reaction of humanity on Earth. That's what they called the creators,
right?
And then they came back and they looked at their progeny and said, okay, cool. But then they were supposed to come back and destroy it, which is the ship that they found that was leading back to the home base, supposed to come back and destroy everything that they created.
Right.
Well, throughout this process of the people finding that ship, they inadvertently created the... what seems like it's going to become the alien species, because you remember his jaw pops out like the alien jaw, but it's still attached. It's not two separate jaws yet. It's still one jaw, but it drops out. And that was from the octopus monster and the creator giant. That's what created that alien offspring. It's like the octopus monster is kind of like the first face hugger.
Right, because in Prometheus, everything that came out of the eggs was a different species. Because like three people got different things.
It's because it was everything that was being interacted with by the black goo. So the black goo was changing and mutating it. That's why.
Oh, okay.
Right. So the black goo, so when the guy gets it in his system and it starts to mutate him. The other guy gets it in his system. He doesn't realize it because he was put in there by the android who spiked it in his wine. Then he knocks up his wife.
Mm-hmm.
wife. Yeah, yeah, they're married.
Girlfriend.
Right. Or they might, they're getting married or something, whatever, right?
Yeah.
His significant other, he knocks mm-hmm. her up. She has the first little octopus baby that she has extracted from her stomach in that really brutal scene.
Right.
That is such a brutal scene. Then that's what ends up capturing the giant, consuming the giant, gestating the new egg, creating the first alien, quote unquote, kind of monster, because that's when the jaw snaps. So it really comes down from the black goo and then the mixing of the DNA and blah, 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 blah.
So.
Lots of aliens.
Because I've only watched the very beginning of Prometheus. And
it's a good film.
Yeah. I thought we saw it in theater.
We watched it on the couch and I played WoW while you guys watched it.
You should go back and watch it. It's really good.
I'll give it another run.
Tonight.
No.
Yes.
So anyway, so the alien bursts out of this guy's chest. As we say, the facehugger falls off. John Hurt's character wakes back up. His name is Kane. He wakes back up. Everything seems fine. They're going to go back to Earth because they were supposed to be there already, and that's why they were woken up. They find out they've got 10 more months. They're going to go back and cryosleep. The first thing they're going to do is eat one last supper. And that's when John Hurt gets sick and this thing bursts out of his chest and murders him.
And again, another really gruesome scene. Like, right. Considering the time that it was done in, it was really kind of impressively done.
Well, splattering that blood across her face.
Right.
When the chest bursts open, like mm-hmm. that was so effective.
I didn't care for the puppet turning left and right.
Yeah.
That was really unnatural to me. Because up till that point, everything had felt really natural and like solid.
That was that is one of the failings of the movie, is that that puppet, that baby puppet, is not great.
So no. You don't think that it would have enough conscious to look around and
survey?
No.
It's the movement of it felt very unnatural.
Instead of its head moving back and forth, the whole body rotates.
Yeah.
Well,
like
that's
a
because
worm.
The whole body, it's all one piece. At that point in time,
yeah,
it
but,
hasn't,
it, but it,
right,
did
but it
like, look
it didn't look natural like like a living organism would, like the alien looks really natural. The only other part that really broke immersion for me was the android head, because the modeling for the android head versus
it did break immersion, but I understood what they were trying to do there.
I understood
they
what
were
they were doing
their best,
right?
So
they were working with the constraints they had, but then like that cutaway to the alien head when they're setting it up and then back to it, like. It really kind of, to me, it broke immersion, because that was one of the few, like...
Our listeners at home are like, what android are you guys... Let's get to that. We'll get to the android. So, the alien gets out.
Well, they should have watched this.
Yeah. They starts murdering the crew. The crew splits up. Never split up, by the way. Don't ever split up. You never split up.
Always stay with your wingman.
Werewolf on my arm, what?
they decide... they decide after losing a second person, because the alien catches him by himself... This is the Weasley guy. They decide that they're going to... the captain is going to go through the air ducts where they're clear that this alien is at and chase it out. So, of course, the captain dies in the air ducts. And it's at that point that Ridley takes over the ship because she...
Ripley.
Takes over the ship because now she's in charge. And she talks to Mother and finds out that... The science officer, Ash, played by Bilbo Baggins, is now actually working against their survival.
She didn't know he was an android either.
Well, that's what I was getting there. Come on, man.
Well, you were blowing passports. That's what she found out when talking to Mother.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Did you tell them that we also found out that the baby was shedding its skin?
Oh, yeah. The baby that's maybe the size of a foot-long Subway sub, maybe, is shedding its skin and grows to the size of a full man very quickly.
Right.
Terrifyingly quickly.
Yeah.
Bigger than a full-size man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was a full-size man in rubber suit, so man plus rubber suit.
It was a really tall man.
Yeah, it was. we find out that Ash, the science officer, played by Bilbo Baggins, is actually an android. But no one knew.
Right.
And he attacks the crew because the... Because
he used the One Ring too long. We got it.
Well, no.
Right. No, I'm not kidding. Did you see his eyes flutter?
Well,
I was like, dude.
It becomes clear that he is working against the crew. His whole plan now is to get this thing back to Earth.
Right.
Right.
For the company.
Weapon Tech. Wutani.
And then...
that's the name of the company.
Wutani. That's right.
Yeah.
And so we find out that he is working against the ship. The crew attack him and then beat his head off and break him. And then...
Oh, no. That's when they find out he's an android.
Yeah. Yes.
Because everyone's like, what the hell?
right.
Yeah. Well, when he starts sweating white goo.
Right. Yeah.
So they beat his head off and then reactivate him to ask him questions. But essentially.
And then he's really complacent with them at that point.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, I think he'd realized at that point that they had no chance.
He's like, right. You're all going to die. And then he does, doesn't he? You're all going to die and it's going to be glorious. This thing is perfect and you're not.
He gives them his sympathies.
He did. It's not right. Really his sympathies.
At that point, Ripley decides they're going to blow the ship and run away on a shuttle. So he sends his two people that are left, or she sends her two people that are left down to get coolant.
Yep.
And she's going to prep the shuttle. Then she realizes the cat. First of all, there's cat on the ship. Name's Jonesy. Jonesy can fend for himself against the alien. If he's going to get blown up, that's Jonesy's own fault. Not really worried about Jonesy at this point. I love cats so much.
You let the cat go when you're fighting a horrible alien that's destroying all of your crew members. People,
you would
people
think.
Outvalue cats. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So she leaves the shuttle with the door wide open.
Yeah.
Wide
to
open.
To go get Jonesy. While she's trying to get Jonesy, the two people getting coolant get murdered.
Oh, obviously.
And yes. She gets there just inside to see them, time to see them dead. She sets the self-destruct, gets on the shuttle, launches the shuttle with Jonesy. She found him. Yay.
Right.
And that's when,
well, the alien looked at Jonesy and didn't care. He's like, meh, it's a stupid cat. That's not even enough for snack.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there's that. So she gets away in the shuttle only to find out that the alien is there. And that was masterful. Cause I'm like,
right.
The first time I saw it was last year. Cause I had never seen this movie.
Right.
Shame.
And we watched it and I was just like, well, okay. The movie's over, right?
Nope.
Why is there movement back there? What's going on?
Yeah.
The alien was hiding, and it was either hurt or hibernating.
I'm not sure which.
But it was hiding and getting ready to... And it flushes it out.
So well done, because the first time the camera pans past that...
You don't know
it's there. And you have to, like, consciously pay attention
to
spot it in there. It is so well done, so well hidden. And, like...
It looks like one of the pipes.
Right, and so when it moves... And she jumps. You're like, dude, no kidding. I'd have jumped the hell back, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think, we've both screamed or something
the first time I watched it, I was like, what? Yeah.
I thought it was just when I first saw it, I thought it was an excuse to show Sigourney Weaver in her underclothes. That's what I thought it was. I was
it still was.
They've hired a female actor. Got to get her under her clothes. It's 1979. Come on now.
It still was that, but they at least used it to also promote the suspension.
Right.
Or the suspense.
Like, she's comfortable. She's fully exposed, right?
Yeah. Right.
So she gets in a spacesuit, straps herself down, ejects the thing out the back, shoots it with a... Why did they have a harpoon?
Why wouldn't you have a harpoon?
In space?
Why? I don't see a problem with this.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, I don't think it was a harpoon. I think it was a climbing thingy.
Yeah.
A grappling hook.
Grappling hook. Gets Batman. The alien outside. The door shuts. She blasts the engine, melts the alien to death. Hypothetically, we don't know that the alien actually dies.
I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, it's in space.
But no, because they go back to LV-426. The story continues back on that planet, somewhere else.
That's right. True.
And then it follows Ripley, and then, they resurrect her as a clone. And
so,
I'm going to spoil everything. I'm going to ruin everyone's day.
The alien is really well handled. The close-ups on its face are clearly puppets. I mean, they are obviously puppets because they're not a real alien, but they're really good.
They're really
good.
It's dripping.
It's not a real alien?
It's like dripping drool. Huh? Dripping drool the whole time, and it has a mouth inside of its mouth.
Yes.
Which, that's terrifying.
And when it opens up, it comes out really nice and really clean. Like, the teeth sparkle the way they're supposed to. The whatever they use, like a lube or something for the saliva, and it looks really sharp. I mean, it looks really clean. He's covered in that film the whole time, so
the thing is, I have problems with bodily fluid, so like the android scene, I could have thrown up.
Yeah.
The alien, I can't watch the alien when it attacks people because it grosses me out and I want to throw up. Yeah, so I had my eyes closed most of the
time. This is not the series for you.
Yeah, maybe not. I really like it. There are a couple of times when you can tell it's a dude in rubber suit.
Right, right.
But
like the very end.
Yeah, but it's so good until that point.
Right.
I have no problem with that. There are some cliches here, but I'm not sure if they're really cliches or if this is the beginning of them. This is 1979, so
it depends on which one. Some of them were, yeah. Some of them were like set up because of Alien, because it was such an impactful film. And as odd as it is, like this could have easily gone B-side and gone to the wayside. Yeah. It was the Geiger influence that really made the Alien what it was, and then Ridley Scott is just a sharp, sharp director. Yeah, he really pays attention to his cues.
There was nothing wasted here. We didn't see a scene where something wasn't important.
Right.
And that's key to a movie. I understand sometimes you have to put in a scene that isn't super important because that's why it's important.
Right.
But this was not the case. Like, every time we see something, every time we see something happening, it's actually happening. And the modeling in this... I know they were
amazing.
When the ship is taking off and landing, it's the same scene. Yeah. Right. By the way, it's just filmed one way and then reversed.
Right.
It still looks really good. Yeah. Right. And you could tell there are Christmas lights underneath it.
Right.
But
well,
it looks good.
Yeah. It does. It looks really sharp. It looks really clean.
In 2016, I can tell there's space. They're Christmas lights. In 1979, I don't know that I would have
caught that.
So the modeling is really good. The alien, the dead Prometheus alien, is really creepy looking. And it's like he's calcified in
and
there.
And the thing is, there's so much detail in that alien ship. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And I think is what really sells the film on a whole, right? Is
the detail everywhere. That's exactly what I was going to say. Because the way that Ridley or however took Geiger's vision of this world and then brought it to life, and I think that's where most of their budget went into the alien ship.
Yeah, we talked about that because like this is an $11 million budget. That's even 79. That's still a lot of money.
Right.
Where did that go? And it's not the actors because none of them are really big names. It was the scenery.
Right.
They worked really hard at making this look good. And everything's really dark in this. There's not a bright, bright scene until you're on the shuttle. The shuttle's a little bright. But
now,
still.
What's really interesting in stark contrast to a Space Odyssey or Star Trek, they kind of got the technology really wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And that was something that really, I think, it's even now, like, you look at this, you look at Aliens, and the technologies are all wrong, and it feels out of place. It doesn't feel like it.
It's almost like we entered a technology dark age, and that's why we ended up with this movie.
Right, right.
So, there is no forward vision for technology other than the cryosleep, but that's not really all that.
That's impressive. Commonplace in a lot of these films, though.
It's really just, it's all vector crap.
Right.
I mean, it's all ones and zeros on the screen for some parts of the movie.
Like, right.
There's no forward vision for the technology, but the turnaround is...
Well, you know, Mother does interact. She hears the voice and she does respond on the screen. So at least, like, there's kind of that Siri thing going, but that's all she is Siri. She doesn't have that intelligence like Hal does.
Yeah. Well, and but at the same time, that still allows our audience in 79 to connect to the film.
Right, right.
So, I mean, as much as you're absolutely right, it allows the audience to connect, which is what you want in a horror.
Right.
Because then it makes them feel like they're more in it. Whereas 2001 A Space Odyssey, you don't want them to connect because you want them to be beyond that.
Right.
So maybe that's the reasoning behind it, or maybe just they didn't really have a forward vision. I mean, that could
probably
be.
You know, you think about how much work was done with Space Odyssey on research. I think the money was into development for the world and not development for the ship.
And that's fair. And
Did you feel like it detracted?
No.
Because I didn't really pay attention to the technology.
I'm so used to technology in space in sci-fi never actually being right that I just accept whatever they give me. Like, you look at Minority Report, which, whether you like it or not, has futuristic technology.
Right.
Same thing with iRobot. Like, those aren't that far in the future, but their technology hasn't gone that far. But then you look at something like...
I think a modest appraisal, though, like, looking at 100 years from now, where we are now, I don't think we're going to be crazy far off. So having a modest appraisal... I think it's a much more you know, some of the holographic screen stuff that Cruise was doing is stuff that we're messing with now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's actually probably a really, really good way to handle it, and it's probably about what we're going to be seeing mainstream in 100 years from now.
That is my favorite part of the technology in Minority Report, is that manipulating things physically in a digital space,
right? Mm-hmm.
Like, I like the idea of that. I wish we had it now because I'm tired of this. I've got to go get a freaking cord to download something.
Right, right. Well, we're heading that direction. Yeah. It fits that. I think that fits more with where we're going to be it's not super sci-fi and pushes us off. Yeah. But I think, like, you know, in 100 years, if we undervalued that, it's going to show. Or even in 20 years, if something really badass makes that look primitive, it's going to show a whole lot. Right. And I think we see that with Alien.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think it didn't, the technology didn't detract for me because, you know, mining is a dank, dirty job. You know, you don't like need all these special gadgets around. You need like mining equipment.
I don't know if you guys,
the guys driving the Toro trucks now have their freaking all their readouts on their app on their phone but Bluetooth from their tractor.
But if you're looking at, so I worked at Cummins,
right,
top of the line, right. I mean, these are good engines they make. All their stuff is old CNC crap.
Right.
I mean, these are old, terrible computers that nobody knows how to program. They're operating 40 years behind. But that's because that machine works and does what they need it to do. So they're not going to invest all that money. So in a sense, maybe that's the case here in this one singular movie, if you look at it in just this one bubble. Because later we get the military stuff, and it's just as bad. That doesn't make sense.
Right, right.
The military stuff should be like top-of-the-line lasers and crap.
Right, right.
And that's that is there is the disconnect, because in Aliens you don't see that,
right?
And so at least in this one, I can be like, well, they're gonna put out the crappiest, cheapest ship that will fly. They don't care. They just wanted to get to A to B. They don't need anything special,
right? Right.
So yeah, that I guess that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah,
so. I can give you that.
All right. So overall thoughts. What did you guys think of the movie, Rob?
Aliens a 4. It's a solid 4. I think it's got some parts that break the immersion, and that kind of really pulls away from it. Other than that, it's a good film, and it really sets up some spectacular films that follow.
Right on. Shirley, any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I would give it a 4.2.
I'm going to give this a 4.5. I don't like horror movies, but this one's a solid one that has some jumps and some really suspenseful stuff and not crap horror. I mean, there's some crap horror.
Just wait till we talk about the James Cameron version.
I really enjoyed the movie. When I decided I wanted to watch it, we just went straight out and bought it. And I suggest people do that. Actually, I found out I can get all 4 of the movies.
The quadrilogy, yes.
$40 on iTunes in HD. So that's something I wouldn't mind seeing is some HD Aliens.
The Blu-ray versions and the special editions, especially for the later films, really are kind of critical. Alien 3, you really want to watch the director's cut. You don't want to watch the theatrical one.
Really?
So there was a lot going on. There was a lot of argument between the studio and the director. Yeah. That was...
Well, we had a French director on that one.
Yeah, it was a French director, and there was a lot... I mean, it feels like a French film.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still an Americanized French film, but it feels like a French film. And it's really, really dramatic. And you really want to get that vision that he wanted, not the vision the studio wanted.
Fair enough.
I think it's like an extra like 20 or 30 minutes or some crazy stuff like that. It's a lot. It's a lot of extra movie.
Okay. I really think this is something. I think the two classics we've watched so far are worth watching.
Oh yeah.
To get it under your belt, even if you like Shirley didn't care for 2001, but I think it's well, it was worth watching though, right?
Yeah.
If you're
for experiencing it,
if you're looking for classic movies, these both fit it. If you're looking for something fun, Sharknado might be up your alley. Fido is much better of a much better film.
4.5 all the way.
So, I highly suggest checking those out.
Well, I think if you're curious about the sci-fi histories, Space Odyssey is really important.
Well,
right?
And same thing with Alien.
Alien takes what they had done in Space Odyssey and transforms it, right?
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, it uses a lot of the similar shots, a lot of the similar setup. Space, like 2001, really is kind of defining film for the sci-fi genre.
Yeah.
Like, it really does things. I mean, it talks about topics that we still see in stuff like Stargate now and Star Trek and all these different parts. Like, I mean, Star Trek goes through a whole different part of the series where they're going to try to ascend. And you know, I mean, they do this in all the different shows. And this kind of does that premise, right? So these are important films for what sci-fi is and becomes. And then they're parodied so much that the parody loses its impact if you don't know the reference.
Like I said, if you watch History of the World Part 1, which I will go back and watch, probably very soon. That first opening scene doesn't make any sense without 2001.
Not at all.
And there's a lot of stuff that we see in modern horror and modern sci-fi stuff that Alien really, really pushes on.
Oh, yeah.
So, otherwise, guys, thanks for listening. We will be back next time. We're watching Predator,
Yeah.
Because, you know, eventually we're going to work our way towards Alien and Predator, probably on the B side.
Probably on the B side. More than likely on the B side.
And
yep.
We're also watching Barbarella, and I apologize ahead of time if you watch Barbarella for the podcast. Because
you should,
it is,
again, this is a pioneering film, right? This is a cult classic. I don't know why. I really don't get it. I don't understand the beauty or the passion that people have for this thing, because it's in the monstrosity of a film.
Yeah.
But it is. People really relish it. And it does do some cool things here and there that are worth mentioning, but it is really bad.
And then after that, I know that our classic, the fourth classic we're going to do is Jaws. I don't know what our B-side is yet. We're working on that.
So I threw down a film called Idle Hands.
Okay.
It is a 90s.
Isn't it where the guy gets his hand cut off and it's some kid loses his hand and yeah. The guy's prison hand gets sewn onto his arm.
Something
and
weird like that. Yeah, it's a really bad good film.
Wow.
It's really good.
I've seen some of it and it's hilarious.
And I did add Labyrinth to the classics.
Of course.
Oh, nice.
Of course.
Yeah.
We are going to eventually watch Purple Rain given the recent passing of Prince and the fact that I've never seen Purple Rain, and George from our Masks of Nyarlathotep podcast has really pushed for it. Ever since we went and saw More Stay in the Time.
Well, then tell him to be on here with us and we'll watch it.
Oh, he will be here in an instant. Maybe we can, that's the one where the B-side can be the room.
Yeah.
Because then George can enjoy both of them.
Oh, God.
You know,
you guys, you know what? I'm going to have to just bow out for that one.
We'll toss on Legend while we're at it.
Oh,
We did, we actually did Legend for the Nerds Domain podcast.
Yeah, we can fix that.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you guys real soon.
Bye.